Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. Jackie, I am so excited to invite you to the Organize 365 podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. I have this huge debt of gratitude to you. So I just really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, like just me to you, instead of you talking to everybody.
I'm excited to dig into your story, learn more about you as well. Can you tell me first, like, how did you find Organize 365? Like, how did you find me to begin with?
So probably in, 2015 or 2016, so sort of close to the beginning of what you were doing, I had a long drive from my home to my work. I live in a suburb of Philadelphia, and it's, a good 50 minutes with no traffic and can be an hour and 15 minutes with traffic. So I had a bunch of time coming and going, and I hit search to organize, and I found you in the podcast app, in Google Podcasts.
Why were you searching?
So that's how I
Do you just like to organize?
Because, well, I am pretty organized. So it's something I'm already good at, but you just took it to a whole, like your program took it to a whole other level. But back to why. So at that time, both of my parents were quite ill. And so I'm the oldest daughter and a nurse. So you already understand that syndrome, the oldest daughter nurse syndrome. So I just felt like things were very, very disorganized. So I did it to help me feel more organized as the female head of household and as somebody who's trying to organize some older folks.
Yeah, it's a hard phase of life that most of us will go through.
That is a fact. And it was a hard phase of life. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we will get more into that in a minute. But first, tell us who lives with you in your household. Mm-hmm.
So right now I have my husband who just recently retired. Yay for him. Boy, is that an interesting transition. One person retired and the other person still working. Fortunately, I'm blessed I get to work from home. So I get to have lunch with him every day, most days when there's not a Zoom meeting. And then our 24-year-old son, who's just about ready to launch, but he graduated just pre-pandemic. And that kind of messes up the launch. So, but he's still at home too. And he knows all about the Sunday basket. Oh, do I put it in there, Mom? Yes. Then he brings me the binder. Remember that binder that you, he brings, Mom, where would this be in my binder? So he brings it to me. So he knows what, he has a binder and he knows what to do with it.
Oh, I like that. I think that should be a tagline. I have a binder and I know what to do with it. Like just walk around. I have a binder and I know what to do with it. And people are like, oh no, people are, I'm telling you, you walk in anywhere with a binder, the medical office, a school office, a lawyer, like what's in there? What is in there? They want to know what's in your binder and they don't know. And just people are like, oh.
And in every case, I've walked into a doctor's office or the emergency room in particular with that medical binder. And the deaf just look at me and they go, you have a whole med list for your parents. Or most of these times were my mother. By the time I had gone to you, it was my mother. It's like, you have a whole med? Yeah, she's on 20 meds. I have a hard time keeping track of them too. And they were like, thank you. Like, they were trying to help us. Do you know what I mean? But it's like, well, there's 20 meds. How do you keep them all straight, right? I couldn't keep them straight. No one was my own mom's meds. But also just going into a recent workup, worked up negative, but it was scary in the last few weeks. And I walked in, I made a mini binder because the big fat binder is just too heavy to carry around. So I made a mini one. And I'm a nurse, so I know what they need. Literally, I prepared for that visit and it went so well. It went so well. It was like a second opinion visit. And it was like, I got an answer that was helpful and substantive without creating more conflict. So I strongly recommend the binder. And as a pediatric nurse practitioner, I can tell you that that Warrior Mama binder, I've been preaching to moms to bring that with them for years. Mm-hmm. And you just organized it. Now, you are now in the land of the binder mama. Let me explain where you are. You are now a warrior mama because if you want your kid to get, you better bring. Mm-hmm. And I say this in the context of a visit with sick people. And it's like, you need, you now need to, you need to have the last note. Do you see how much time I'm spending trying to get the last note from your specialist? Like, yeah. Nobody's going to do that for you ever again. I'm pretty organized with the rest of my visits. So if I go over in one, it's not that big of a deal. But it really helps. It really helps. Doesn't cost any money to get an old binder.
Yeah, because you are a nurse, I'm going to ask you this question because this is what I have figured out for myself, but I don't know if it's actually true. So what I figured out for myself was there are a list of questions the doctor and nurse are going to ask me at every single visit. They're going to go through the med list every time. These questions they're going to ask every single time. There's only so much amount of time for the visit. So once you get through all those things we have to get through, then they read through the notes from the last time we were there. And like you said, any new testing or anything that we've had, then you usually have like maybe 20, 25% of the time left in order to like discuss like what you're actually there for today. And there's usually no time for like what will be next other than if there's some other test that they need before the next visit. So what I found with my kids was when I could come in with a med list, and like you said, I'll bring the note from the other specialist and I'll hand it all to you. Like I literally would have new doctor's appointments with psychiatrists and I would just watch them read. Like they would read all of my notes and they would say, okay, great. Here are the questions I have. And they would jump right to the end of that appointment. And we would spend 50 to 75% of our time on what the past doctors had said, what med changes I wanted to do. I'd already researched the meds that were even possibilities. And my kids' doctors would say to me, Lisa, talking to you is like talking to somebody in our R&D department. They said, you understand how these medicines interact with each other better than most of the people on staff. They said, you ask us questions that we have not finished researching yet, so we can't apply. So in a way, it was kind of frustrating, but they also liked it when I showed up because like we had like a collegiate conversation.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's really important. You had also, by having all the facts, you had thought through your questions. I actually made myself a form for it because it was such an emotional visit that I thought I couldn't do it without creating my own form. And literally, I wrote down the three things I wanted to cover. Don't cover more than three things at a visit. Just saying, never more than three. And then I wrote down, so those were my questions. And then what the treatment plan and the rationale was. So I scripted this out and when the next visit would be. Then I asked my favorite question, which is what didn't I ask that I should have asked? That gave her a chance to like, tell me if the tests are positive, then you're going to get this further workup. But if the tests are negative, then we're done. So the good news is the tests were negative. And it gave her a chance because I do disclose that I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner. Yeah. So I did do adults back in the 80s, but I got out of that. I got out of the adult business a long time ago. So I don't know that much. But yeah, it really helped me to think it through. An important visit is worth thinking through. Don't expect they'll have stuff. And bring two copies. Because when I went into that office, I gave my copies to the front desk. And I kept a copy for me to look at. Well, they were scanning it. So it wasn't available to the doctor in the room. So I just went, here are the labs.
Yes. Okay, I do that too. And I don't think I ever realized that. Like, I always think through the entire doctor's visit, what we're there for, what I want to know next, and then what is the step after that? Like, I did it even with Abby. So now I'm able to go back into her OB appointments. Mm-hmm. She is an adult. I let her take complete ownership of all of her visits. And then at the end of the visit, when they said, you know, she needs to have the blood glucose test and like all these things for her pregnancy, I'm out on this book tour. So I'm standing behind her as she's booking her appointments and she's booking them on Friday. And it would be more convenient for me if they were on Monday. I'm like, do you have Monday available? They're like, yes. I'm like, great. Cause we're already here for another doctor's visit that day. And I said, and then 2 weeks later, they want her to do this blood glucose, you know, when you drink the sugary drink. And they said, you can actually do it in any, this range of dates. And actually on that Monday, you're within that range. You could do it that day. I'm like, great. Cause it's like the Monday before I leave on the book tour. And I'd like to be there to get the results in case there's anything we need to change before I'm gone for literally 6 weeks. And I realized based on how they do their appointments, I'll only miss one OB appointment if we can get that test done on the Monday before I leave. She'll have one visit without me. Then when I get back, we'll go to every 2 weeks and then we'll go to every 1 week. And so it's just that little bit of asking those questions, knowing my schedule in advance when we got to the schedule. And we booked out for, you know, 2 months worth of visits, whereas normally she would have just booked the next one. I was like, let's just book a few more. Can we book more? They're like, yeah. I'm like, great. I want this date. I want this date. I want this date. And we just started you know, booking all of those on the counter. Sometimes you don't realize that you can be booking further in advance. They're only going to give you the next one, but you can actually book out a whole bunch.
You can do that for your pediatric visits too. That's actually a thing. And so that you can be available for your peds visits too. Mm-hmm. It works in any specialty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just something to think about. And it helps, especially if when you have a baby, you got stuff, right? You got the little baby carry, little baby couch, the big diaper bag, you got stuff, you know? And it really helps if you can plot those visits out so your family members can support you in the peds visits.
Yeah. Yeah. You obviously are going to have sick visits that you can't plan, but if you can book like even I book my dentist appointment visits 2 years out because it's harder to get the 6 month slot, get the next two and then the next two. So you stay ahead of everyone else. Who's booking. Yeah.
Right. And get it at a time that's good for you.
You've got your calendar out anyway. Like just go to the next two.
Yeah. Just do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you were taking care of your parents. You had this really long commute. Mm-hmm. So what time of year was it? What was the first thing you did to take your organization to the next level?
So I listened for a long time because I was just in the chaos. So I'm listening to these podcasts. So of course that we know that was starting to shift my mindset. Then Dad passed away and I had to totally reorganize Mom. My dad had been a CPA for 50 years and he was actually the caretaker for my mom. So that's like a little pattern. Just notice that in life, you know, the caretaker often doesn't take care of their own needs in any rate. So he was more organized, better at everything than anybody. So I'm holding myself up to this really high bar and I felt like I had to do more to get organized. And I felt like that would be what would help me. And it kind of did. The estate wasn't that complicated because they'd been married for, I don't know, maybe 50 years, maybe more than 50 years, I guess, maybe 55 years. So they've been married a long time. So the estate wasn't that complicated. And my mom had a previous medical problem. So she was with it. She could talk to you, but she lost a lot of her working memory from an injury that she sustained. So it made sense and she had some memory, but her working memory was really messed up. So I was there to help her. So the first time I remember it, back to your question, really being like, oh, I have this, was taking her to the emergency room, one of them multiple times, and then just being like, and then the second time was something was always broken at her place. Even though she lived in this nice facility, there was always something that wasn't working the way she wanted to. And I was able to call the cable company on a Sunday and answer all their questions. And they have these little numbers and the numbers are like 20 digits. Well, do you know the number for your cable converter box? Well, I happen to have that right here. So that's when I remember it was just like really good. And finally I got her to start to use a red Sunday basket. It didn't have all the organizers in it. Just Mom, there's checks that come for you sometimes. Put them in the red basket. You don't need to put them under things because they sometimes start to like make piles or bags of things, you know? Yeah, put it in there. And finally, I got her to do that. I don't need that. And Mom, it would really help me.
Yeah, it'd help you. And then when you come, you just check the box. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. It took me a while and I took no for a few months. So what I would tell others is don't take no when they tell you no. Just bring it back up again. Remember that memory problem? They don't always remember that you asked before.
Good point.
Right? And so if it would help you, the memory thing turns out to be a thing, you know? Yeah, especially when there's checks, Mom. Like, I'm responsible financially for you. So at any rate, and the other time that I noticed, I had a meeting when Mom passed just pre-pandemic and I met with the lawyer for almost our last time. And the lawyer said, you have no idea how many thousands of dollars you saved your estate and your family. And I'm like, well, what did I do? Specifically tell me what I did. And she's like, well, you were engaged. Okay. And you followed directions. Okay. I'm a nurse. I can be engaged and follow directions. Right. I got a whole degree in that. But she said, you were really organized. And really all I did was I would scan documents. I had them in a folder in my computer. I would put them in a folder, a secure folder so she could get them. And I had been organized before she passed. So I kind of kept working on getting her assets more her whole financial situation more simplified. So I didn't have to look in multiple banks and do multiple things multiple times. So there you go.
Somebody
that's
has
when
to
I
organize
knew.
It. Either you're going to organize it or the lawyer is going to organize it. Somebody has to organize it. So if you organize it, you save yourself money and cost yourself time. If they organize it, you cost yourself money and you save yourself time. Like, which one do you have more of at this
time? Exactly. And then my brother-in-law, unfortunately, passed away in January of 2021 from the COVID, which was very sad. And so my husband, so there were three of them who were still surviving. And my older brother-in-law, who's still surviving, he had the COVID. So they lived in the same town. And so my husband is really the executor now of the estate. Wow. And I gave him, the Sunday basket wasn't going to work for him. So I gave him a binder and I gave him all the 1.0 slash pockets and just a bunch of blank ones. And that helped him. So finally he got rid of all the other slash pockets, except the key slash pocket, blue, the waiting one, or you call it waiting or pending. Yeah. He goes, that's what helped me. And that ended up saving the estate thousands because he was so organized in the middle of a pandemic in Pennsylvania. So one state over from you, we have something called an inheritance tax. And if you pay it within 90 days of the passing of the decedent, you get a 10% discount. Well, that's thousands in case of most estates, especially if you're not married and it's going to like a non-spouse person.
Right.
So because I kept saying to my husband, you have 90 days, you have 89 days, like we got to get this going. And because of the pandemic, well, it's a lot of money. And it's a lot of money to leave on the table. He literally, because of that binder and him being so organized, that's thousands. So when people say, oh, I can't afford this, let me just tell you, it's by doing it over and over that you learn. That's called iterative, but it's also recursive because you make progress every time. So it sounds like you're spinning your wheels, but you're not. You're making progress every time when you do these organizing sessions and go through the season. So we literally, our family, I just thousands and thousands of dollars, hundreds, thousands of hours of aggravations, tons of stress.
Well, I'm so glad you were able to.
So thank you.
But
I listened, but thank you.
For all of your loss. Like, that's a lot of loss.
Yeah. It is. Mm-hmm. It is. It's really sad. And especially, you know, it's one thing when your parents die, like you expect it. Oh, but the COVID and my brother-in-law, oh my gosh. Such a nice guy. Really miss him. Really miss him.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. You mentioned before I could hit record, because you were so excited to be on the podcast.
I am excited. Yeah.
And I'm so excited to have you. Like, the impact that Organized 365 has had on your work during COVID. Yes. Tell me about that.
Oh, so remember the podcast that you did? You probably remember the one about stress and chaos. Well,
yes.
In COVID times, it was stressful and chaotic for me at work. And so what do I do? So I mentioned I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner by trade, but if you live long enough and you work hard, somebody makes you a manager or an administrator. So that's what happened to me. I got, you know, first you're a trainer, then you start to manage some projects, and then you're officially a manager. So I have a director level management position. And during COVID, things changed from morning to afternoon, you know, with what we knew. And I worked for a very large company in Philadelphia. We're the largest primary care provider in the region, possibly the state, depending on how you count the patients. But we take care of about 89,000 patients, and we're a federally qualified health center, which means we take care of medically underserved people. Like, that's what we do. And that's what I've always done. So anyway, it was just so chaotic. My husband had retired, and I was like, I think I just want to retire. And I'm not like quite the age yet, but I'm close. Mm-hmm. And because of going back to that Friday work box and the regularity of going back to the Sunday basket, and I know I'm not going to say I did it every week, but the Sunday basket, I really do every week. The Friday work box, some weeks I just couldn't do it. But once you get back to it and reset it, it really does lower the stress. So you can't fix the chaos of the pandemic. Like, nobody can fix that. But what you can fix is you and your response. And I literally was going to quit. And because I was just this close, and it's not, my boss is wonderful. It was just so much stress. and very long hours for a long time, you know, easily 10, 11 hour days most days, and then sometimes on the weekend too. And it was very difficult. But because of the regularity of coming back to this, I was like able to push the reset button. And it really does help my, the work that I do for my company really does help everybody take care of patients, because I organize the training. I think that's what my boss keeps saying. She'll give me something that's like unsolvable. And then, well, you just got it organized. And I'm like, I got a raise because of that too. Just saying, you make money from it. Like, you know, 3% of your salary is like not bad. That's as much as the company does. It's a federally qualified health center. It's not going to, you know, you're not, I didn't go there because I was going to make the huge bucks. But so, yeah, so 89,000 people got better care because of your program, and they're sick people. These are sick people.
Mm-hmm. You know, there are other people who are in the healthcare industry and in the vaccine industry that have privately emailed and said that you wouldn't believe, Lisa, where your work boxes have ended up during COVID. I remember there was someone who had emailed me December before we in the United States realized we were in a pandemic. And they emailed me in December of 2019. And they said that your work box is working in a program that ended up doing one of the tests. One of the tests for COVID, they were already developing it in December 2019. And she said, your work box is in here, like getting us organized. Like it's amazing how a simple little, you know, a Sunday basket, a work box, it really is in a lot of different places. Like there's just one. And we hear a lot of people are like, we need to get this in our whole organization. Right now we have a lot of people who are getting certified to like move this into organizations so the whole teams can be working on the workbox. If you have any ideas for how I can do that more effectively, please email me, Lisa, at organize365.com, because I'm really good at like teaching a class of people who are listening to the podcast. It's a whole different thing to take a product that people don't listen to the podcast about and then put it into a small team or into a corporation, because a couple of people in that company are listening and have figured it out for themselves to put it in the company. That's my next learning curve. But I know it's working because it clears your brain. Like it gives you a way to look at your thoughts and the work that you need to do, not inside of your brain, on paper in front of you, and you can move it around and you can put it in different piles. And then you can say, okay, this is important, but I can't get to it this week. And this has to be done today. And it gives you more clarity on what has to get done right away without having it in your head. Like when it's digital, it's still all in your head. When it's physical on paper, some of the emotion is taken out.
And, you know, there's a reason why it works. Do you want me to explain why it works?
Yes.
Would that help you? So my PhD is in nursing education. And so I took a lot of education courses. So we're both teachers. So the thing that you take a lot of theory courses. And what you did was you developed a theory of home and work organization. So just thinking about your theory of home organization. So why do you need a theory? Well, Dr. Malise from the University of Pennsylvania, one of my many alma maters, the Dean Emeritus, said theory has fit and grab. Your theory fits and it just holds things together. It grabs. So what do I mean by that? Well, you have categories for things. So just thinking about the Sunday basket, you know, you've got the 1.0 slash pockets, you know, the to-do and the errands and the green, the money, and then the blue, the waiting, and I'm missing one. Calendar, computer, orange, of course, so that I can even name it like that. So you have categories. And then the 2.0 have categories also, but you label them yourself. And then you keep coming back to it. So you have a process. You also have a process for home organization. First, you declutter, right? Then you get organized, right? Then you get productive. So see how all of these things are sort of meta skills. And they're these things that fit anywhere. It has fit and grab. And what your theory does is it prevents what I call the four horsemen of the apocalypse: overwork, underwork, rework, and workarounds. So overwork is too much work, too many steps. You're always looking for something, right? Underwork is you don't have to be the head of household or the clinical practice director to do this. So part of my job at work is training others. So every meeting I come up to, because it's a slash pocket, mentoring. How am I going to get somebody else to learn how to do some of this stuff I just figured out? Then there's rework. Well, you don't want to keep doing stuff over. So it just turned out this past week, I took that and I started making videos of our trainings, because that was on my agenda too. It's like, I don't need to keep saying this. I can do something else while somebody just listens to me go, okay, first you click here, then you click here. The reason you're clicking here and here. And then workarounds, this is the key one. A workaround is you deliberately go around the process, but it's also defined as no correct path. And the workbox prevents no correct path. Because you've got that pending, like, what do I do with something I'm waiting for? You put it in the blue file and you come back to it next week. So it truncates that. So the reason that the whole thing works, and then you're that Montessori thing, and you've got the task stacking going on, and that helps a lot, that you get more done, but it also decreases cognitive load. Mm-hmm. So cognitive load is how much of your working memory you're trying to use at any one time. And when you think about all the things we're trying to do as in our work, at home, we've got all this in our head. If your working memory is all taken up with stuff that's not important, you don't have headspace to think about what is important.
Right.
So that's what I'm grateful to you for, because the categories really matter. The categories are the key.
Well, I love it when people explain why it works, because like I intuitively know it works. Like obviously people are doing it. We know it works, but you don't always know why what you have hit upon works. And some of the things you said, I have never thought about, but that's what I was just explaining. When we get it out on paper, it eliminates working memory. That's why it is different than digital. Digital does not eliminate working memory. That's the piece I had never figured out before. Jackie, you're brilliant.
Thank you. I study hard. I'm organized.
That's why this system works.
I learned a lot of organization from you.
Yeah, like memorized. I'm like, wow, maybe I could just have her do the podcast from here on out. I think that's why it works with people who are diagnosed with ADHD, because primarily, like, there are 8 different executive functions that can be at a deficit to get a definition of ADHD. But only 2 of those you can actually see on an IQ test. And on an IQ test, you can actually measure your working memory speed. And when your working memory is at a certain number, then educators will say, you might want to go see your pediatrician about an ADHD diagnosis. Or if a pediatrician is making an ADHD diagnosis, they will consult an IQ test to find out what the working memory is. It's like that in processing speed. So that working memory piece is one that I, as an educator of children who were diagnosed with ADHD, and as the math teacher, was always trying to find the workaround, because math is extremely working memory heavy, like literature, science yes.
Yeah, that's history, true. That's
literature,
true.
History, you can really, if your working memory number is low, like you could think big thoughts, but if you're trying to do math specifically in the higher level sciences, it's really difficult. So as a third, fourth grade teacher, it's the math teacher that usually would be able to guess if there's going to be a future ADHD diagnosis. And it's because that student will miss a step when they're doing their math. And they seem to be doing fine in all the other subjects. So maybe there's a problem with math. They don't just like math. Maybe it's the math teacher isn't very fun. We tend to be a little bit more nerdy. Maybe it's a math teacher problem. It's probably a working memory problem. And sometimes, you know, you catch up and it doesn't become an issue, but often you will see that ADHD tendency in the math because there is a correct answer and it is a multi-step process, which is going to use working memory. And so, yes, this Sunday basket reduces the working memory, but yet you get through all of the housework that you need to get through without trying to remember. If you notice, like I'm trying always to say, you don't have to remember anything. I write down everything. I have really high working memory. Like I have a high working memory. I'm a mathematician, but I write down everything because then my brain is able to synthesize and vision and do things that are higher level other than remember to-do lists. And most of us are using the majority of our working memory to remember to-do list items. It's not a good, efficient use of your fabulous brain.
Yes,
and you
ma'am.
Can't say it, but Jackie's over here nodding like she's a bobblehead during the podcast.
Yeah, but it's true. But it's all true. What you're saying is all true. Working memory, even people who are really smart, like physicians and nurse practitioners, the use of the electronic health record, which is getting back to the binder where we began, that medical binder, that's why it's really important that we put it out on paper and bring it with us. Because when your provider is working at that computer, I just counted it. I was just training somebody last week, and it was like, there's 4 places on this screen that do the same thing. and they're called different things. Like, what does that do to your working memory? So the EHRs are sort of this thing that electronic health records are built by committee, a committee of different doctors. Well, one doctor likes the button at the top of the screen called this. Another doctor likes at the bottom of the screen called that. And it, you're trying to teach somebody new how to use this, very difficult. And it uses a, where do I click next? So that working memory, even for smart people, if it's all taken up. If you go into a doctor, go ahead.
You want to take me out, ask me a detail. I can't handle it. Like, and then I'm like, for the rest of the day, I'm like, I don't know what I want for dinner, whatever, nothing. Just, I want to be thinking about bigger things.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's why working in an electronic health record is so fatiguing for your providers when you're going into the office. It's different for nurses, but when you're trying to make a diagnosis, you're really using a lot of executive function with that, right? I mean, that's why it's a profession. And the EMR does many things very well, like lab ordering and medication refilling. But when you're actually, it doesn't help you make a diagnosis. And it doesn't help you visualize the data that you need. So one of my jobs is to try to learn all the little tips and tricks and teach other people. But that's why when you go in and you bring stuff on paper, your provider just goes, ah, and they just relax because you gave them everything they need to help you.
So I'm just thinking, like, we've been in a bazillion doctor's appointments. And I'm thinking now through those. You know, so some of the doctors we go to are on their computer the whole time and typing things in the whole time. And then in other providers that we go to, they will have a nurse or they will have a tech come in and take all of those notes. And then when the doctor comes in, there is no computer. And you're right. When they can come in and just know that somebody has already handled the med list and all of that, and they come in and they just talk to you, those are much better doctor visits. The ones where it's all on the computer, it's almost like we had a telehealth visit in person.
Exactly. And it depends on what you need. I mean, if you have a stable medical condition and you don't really like, okay, just refill everything. We're fine. Right. Just let's not make any changes that way.
We don't have any of
those. But when you have a, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when there's an assistant, there's money behind that. Mm. So it depends on the office and how much reimbursement they're getting, their percentage of private pay versus medical assistance, meaning, you know, the medically underserved, like who I serve. So we don't have anybody who documents for anybody. So the weapon we have is me and making it more scripted and more organized and teaching people and helping people solve problems. But if you come in and you have your stuff, like if you're the kind of patient who goes, well, it's in the computer, you figure it out. Let me tell you, we're all like, you're just not going to get the same quality and your concern addressed in a substantive way.
So I'm thinking back pre-pandemic. I cannot remember where I heard this information. The idea was pre-pandemic, we can't have telehealth. Because what happens in an actual physical doctor's appointment is more than just the information transfer. Like they see you in a 3D, like doctors can see with their eyes things that you don't even mention to them. And that they're making assessments like how you walk in the office, how you leave, how you see, like what you look like compared to when they saw you 6 months ago, a year ago, 6 years ago. And like, they don't memorize you, but they do kind of like, there's something off here. Maybe I'll do another check. Like Mary, who does all of our content work, works in the Chicago hospital system. She's a nurse. And like, we will often talk about, she's like, yeah, I'll just be like, you know, I don't think we should let this person go. Let's run one more test. And they'll be like, Mary, it's clear. Like we can let this person go. It's no big deal. And she'll be like, can we just run the test? And they'll run the test and it's like, the person can't go. The person has to stay. And it's just because she like noticed something, even though they'd been there 5 days and they seemed like clinically, they seemed like they were ready to be discharged. And she's like, there's just something off here. Can you just double check this? And it turns out there's a huge problem. Mm-hmm. And it's because you are seeing people in the flesh. Now, of course, obviously we're all doing a lot of telehealth now. And I do think telehealth will stay for certain things, but there is a place for that, like real human to human assessment of people when they're not feeling well. They don't always know how to articulate what is wrong.
Absolutely. And like what you're saying that Mary does, that's a nurse intuition thing, but that comes from years and years of deep expertise. Yep. And it's hard to do it in a relationship that's new, if that makes any sense. Like if I'm seeing a patient for the first time, or anybody's seeing a patient for the first time, it depends on what the problem is. If you've got somebody who's undiagnosed, you really do need that hands-on, and you do need to be able to see them. But telehealth's a good thing for illnesses that are chronic illnesses that are stable. Yeah. You probably don't need hands-on. You do need to come in. You do need 4 visits a year, but you probably only need one of them in person. I would totally agree with it. And, you know, that role of the experienced nurse, man, it's like you can't replace it.
Yeah. And you mentioned you're a nurse practitioner, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love nurse practitioners.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. If I have a choice, I'm like, I'll take the nurse practitioner, please.
We marry nursing and medicine. We're at the junction of nursing and medicine, right? That's where we are.
You're the best of both. Like, you're the best of both. In my opinion.
Well, we try. Well, thank you. That's what we try to do. Now, we don't take the place of physicians. So some nurse practitioners may not like me saying that, but I have, how many years of experience as an NP? How many years is it from 98 till now, 2000? It's more than 20 years. Okay, so I have more than 20 years of PEDS NP experience. But boy, if you've got a kid with a kidney problem, I need to talk to a pediatrician to make sure I'm on point with that. Because something's wrong. I can tell you what body system is, but where do I go next? Not totally sure. And am I going to do the most efficient workup for the kid? Probably not. So that's where the pediatrician comes in for somebody who's an experienced NP like me. And then sometimes they like to talk to me because if it's a complex chronically ill kid, I'm all over that. You know, the kid needs stuff. The mom needs coaching. Where's your binder? Didn't we talk about the binder last time? Come on, put this stuff in a folder. Come on. You don't know who your case manager is at your insurance company? Call them and find out. You need to know that. You need to know what their phone number is. So that's the kind of stuff I try to do.
What a blessing you are to people, because no one teaches you this stuff. You know, I mean, you really, when you have a medically complex kid, you're constantly trying to figure out what they need next, how you're going to afford it, time and money wise. And then also, like, sometimes you think you're just making it up in your head. Like, maybe it's not as bad as you think, or maybe you're just going overboard, or it's going to resolve itself. And then you'll have people at school and at medical facilities who'll say, oh, yeah, it's fine. And you're like, yeah, but in my gut, I just feel like it's not really fine, which you should listen to your gut more, by the way. But then you're like, I can't, they just said no. So am I really going to get a second opinion? It's going to cost more money. And I don't know if that's going to be covered. And like, you just spend so much time in your mind about it.
Going over all these things. Yeah, it is hard. And you know, it's interesting. The families teach it to you over time. You'll get the really experienced families who they're really the ones who taught me a lot. And some of the other nurses that I work with when I worked at a big pediatric facility in Philadelphia for many years. So you have to be willing to learn. I was always, you know, like you, that love of learning. That's why I wanted to get a PhD. I wanted to understand more about the world. So I got the PhD.
Yeah. Well, Jackie, what do you think you have more of now?
Besides time, money, and peace of mind?
Sure.
Besides that?
Yeah.
Time, money, and peace of mind. And a lot of time and a lot of money. And a lot of money. A lot more money. Like so much more than what you charge. It's crazy how much more money it is. Just the thousands that I saved on my mother's estate, my husband's estate, like got that discount, like, because I knew, like, well, I knew the process, but all the little checks that you find that it's like, oh, I know where that is now. All the time I saved, you know, I just broke down and bought myself a tile for my keys. Sometimes I misplace them. That's just having like the mental kind, you know, that was a lot of time. It's probably more time than the $30 or the $25 that the tile will cost. Mm-hmm. No financial interest, of course. My husband just misplaced his keys and I'm like, we're getting you a tile too. So less stress, like just, you know, not looking around for stuff. And then you have time to do things that are important to you, like Now that the pandemic settled down, we joined a gym and it's a very relaxing place.
So nice. What do you think you have less of?
Stuff I don't need. Paper I don't need. Because I can actually, I've actually thought through what do I need and how much space does it need to take up? And anxiety about what happens when it's my turn. You know, am I leaving someone, our son a mess? And the answer is no, I'm not leaving him a mess. Not that my family, parents left me a mess, but, you know, my father really was better at than everybody else at it. And he didn't really need to explain much other than it's all there, except that a lot of his piles were in the basement when he lived at home. And then when he got sick, I had to move him and I moved his piles. His piles were perfect. Just letting you know, the whole thing worked. But if they had been in binders, they would have been portable, wouldn't they have been? And then I would have picked up the binder. And so I totally messed him up. And it's like, but you can't go back and live in that house. You need to live in an apartment, in a facility where if something happens, it was independent living, but with supports, if that makes any sense. So by having the binder, so now I've got 5 binders. Actually, I have 8 binders, but that's, I just need more space than that, than 5.
You're an overachiever.
Well, I guess so. You get a PhD or an everything. Mm-hmm.
What do you wish you had known sooner?
That it would have been faster and easier to just buy the bloody Sunday basket. I thought I could do it from listening to the, I mean, if you listen to it 5 times on the way to work and not like, no, it really is faster. And then getting your house organized or someone else's house, there's a lot packed into your videos that when you see it as an exemplar in your kitchen, that exemplar thing turns out to be a thing. It's like, it's 2 minutes. How can it make a difference? Just saying, if you want it, you can do it slow or you can do it fast. If you want to do it fast, pay the money. If you want to do it slow, it'll happen anyway. Like I did it the slow way at first. And now it's sort of like I'm on round 3 because now I just thought about, well, why don't I make my menus out for 6 weeks? And then I don't only have to menu plan one time and I copy and paste the rows. Every 2-3 weeks, I just do the same thing. And you change it for the season, of course. But, well, now my husband knows what we're having for dinner because he goes. Now, I'm not saying it's perfect. And it turns out, what you're seeing behind me is our hotel room because I'm in Cape May through the wonders of the internet. Cape May is a New Jersey beach town that it is now safe to go to, according to the governors of both of our states. I follow the rules. So my husband's out on the beach. I'm going to bring him lunch. And I brought lunch. Now, not only am I wasting way less food, I just went through my kitchen. I wasted 4 cans of soup. That's it. And I have some things that are near the end date. And it's like, oh, we build our menus around those. So I'm saving money on food. Then I changed the order of the 100-day challenge for me because we were coming away for a week. I'm not doing the 100-day challenge when I'm on vacation. And it was like, oh, I built in a few prep days. And then I made lunches for us and breakfast. So instead of going out, so I'm saving money on that. Now, I only want to go out to eat. Look, you know, there's how much time, how much salt can you tolerate when you're our age, right? You got to kind of cut that down. Yep. Too many calories. We go out once a day. That's enough to go out to eat.
Yep.
And it saves so much money. And then you can afford a nicer hotel an extra day. So I've saved a lot of money. Because of the program.
I love all of those time savings you just shared also, how you take it and you're going further and further and further with your productivity. You're clearly in the productivity portion and then you're adapting that to your unique needs, lifestyle.
Correct.
Yeah, it's awesome.
But this is only my second formal time through, but I'm just telling you, I listened to it a gajillion times. Oh, you've taken a lot of the stuff down from your website. I'm just like, oh, well, I guess that's not true anymore because that was from 3 years ago. All right. And I just keep listening and I would re-listen to stuff. And so, yeah, but it's faster.
Change.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
Yeah. Luckily, you know, whatever I share, it's going to be evergreen. You can listen to it 5 years from now, 10 years from now. A couple of examples might not be 100% relevant, but organization has not changed that much in the last, 20, 30, 40 years.
It hasn't. Like, for example, we're going to be having our kitchen cabinets refaced. Now we finally feel okay about having somebody in our house. So that's going to mean taking everything out. So I thought, should I go through the kitchen first? No, let me go through the kitchen first, do that part of the challenge and declutter a little more. This is my second time through, and then push off the other areas of the house till later. And then I reordered it so that the other areas where we'll be having our temporary kitchen, they'll be next when we come back, like our dining room and our living room. We're going to move stuff into there and we'll do it that way. And then I can do the closet again last, but it's really pretty good. So I don't really, like, I'm not desperate to have more clothes. Do you know what I mean? Because I did it pretty good the first time. Yeah. So you can just move things around to it works with your life, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just move it around.
I love
till it fits.
Yeah. I love how you're reordering it, because people will always be like, oh, this is like my fifth round through and my kitchen's already done. I'm like, then skip the kitchen. Like, you can skip ahead. You don't have to do it in the order that, you know, it is in the planner.
Yeah. And sometimes points in your life, you might want to do the kitchen earlier for a variety of reasons or later. Or like in our case, our kitchen, we're going to be having a temporary kitchen. That's the beauty of the reface. You're really only down for a week, especially if you get the laminate countertops. It's like, no, do I want to be down for a kitchen for 4 weeks or for 1 week? Ooh, how about 1 week? Laminate. Right?
Hey, Jackie, what advice would you give to someone who is just now starting out?
Do the Sunday basket first. It's not a big investment of money. And it, you really have to commit. The key with it is that you've got to go back and do the videos, like with Michelle or Monique, who do their Sunday baskets. You got to go back and do it, because then you get your questions answered in real time on that Facebook Live. Now, sometimes my life doesn't work out and I'll actually put it on, and I'm actually fast enough now with the Sunday basket that I can do other things. And some of those things are like organizing my hobby supplies so that I have enough to bring with me on a vacation, because so it's not all. So there's all kinds of other things you can do. And if you feel like your life is in chaos, that's the fastest way to get it out of chaos. Mm-hmm. But the other thing too is I did the 6 month thing and it really worked out for us for the all access. But I have a request. I need you to do a photo club, just like you do for the Sunday basket and the Friday workbooks. I need the same thing and I can't find it anywhere.
Okay. So first of all, you're talking about the 6 month thing. You're saying you did the payment plan for all access.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm trying
to say. Payment plan.
Thank you for understanding.
All access is you bought a Sunday basket and then you did a payment plan for all access where you get the 100 day planner and then you make a couple payments and then we send you, or we unlock your dashboard and then we send you the binders at the very end. So it not only is a payment plan, but it also kind of paces your instructions. So like things get unlocked and show up in the mail and kind of keep moving you through that all access. So I wanted to clarify that. And then, all right, I will write down that idea of doing a club for the photos. I understand what you're saying.
I would just love that, because if I do a paper organizing retreat, it doesn't quite help with the photos, because right. I did get the all access with the photo plan. And it was really good to see how you do that. But I've got this blend of things.
Yeah.
And what's been working for me is creating, I actually learned to do this after my brother-in-law passed away. So we're doing this Zoom funeral. Who knew I'm an expert in doing Zoom funerals? But I'm organized, right? And I can create an email list and I can, you know, work with people and I have a Zoom account and so forth. So anyway, I made a PowerPoint with photos. People gave me photos and I just showed the PowerPoint and we talked. That turns out to be a great way to make a photo book. And then I could pass it out to the family, costs nothing. It helps, no financial interest in Microsoft, God knows. If you have the full paid version, which I paid for, it does give you something called design ideas and it moves the pictures around. Oh. So I know when it looks good, I just don't like doing it myself. So at any rate, I took one and I printed it. I did that with just a test thing and I printed out. You can print. There are companies that will print you a photo book out of a PDF.
Really?
And so what I, yeah. And so the reason I like that is because it's not as heavy. Nothing against your books.
My 100 scrapbooks that I have that are 7 to 10 pounds each.
Right. So, you know, the math teacher, 100 times 7 pounds is like a lot of, that's a lot of weight. I like keeping them on the coffee table and having them be light. And then if somebody spills red wine on it, so what? Print another one. It was 30 or 40 bucks. It's not the end of the world. And so that's where I want to go next, is get that memorabilia side of the family organized. And other people can contribute to it too when it's in that format. You know what I mean? Throw pictures in and then you can rearrange them. Yeah. So that's where I'm going next. And just planning out my retirement.
I love it.
Now, it's not going to be for 5 more years. And hopefully I'll get to work till I'm about 70. So I probably have about 10 more years. And I know what I need to do in that time. And I keep talking about it because I wrote it down the last time I did the Friday Workbox. It's like, I really do have to teach other people how to do these trainings, how to work in it, how to take care of our medically underserved patients. Yeah. It's a hard, it's not easy to do. So,
but extremely needed. And thank you so much for doing it.
Well, you're welcome. And thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, Jackie, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It was just such a pleasure to get to know you.
It was so much fun.
Are you ready to share your transformational story with me and the rest of the Organize 365 community? We would love to hear it. Please go to organize365.com/Wednesday and fill out an application. I cannot wait to see your application in my email inbox.